Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome once again to the Steve Jones Show. Steve will join us from the Sunbury Motors Studio in moments. Sunbury Motors, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf with their Kia dealership. And you can also see all the different models at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury. Lenape Solar Hotline is going to be wide open for most of the day today. So we'd love to hear from you. Talk about whether you'd watch sports recorded or if they all have to be live, or would you watch it if it was just recorded by you originally live? In other words, would you DVR it? If you could use DVR as a verb, you could dial our toll-free Lenape Solar Hotline at 1-800-795-9565. And, of course, if you have any questions in general or topics that you'd like to discuss, Lenape Solar Hotline is wide open for that today, too. We'll be talking with Curtis Strange about the British Open coming up here shortly. I'll have to dig up some British Open music. I haven't played any British Open music in about a year, ironically enough. Big time in Britain right now. I mean, they just got done with Wimbledon. Also on Sunday was the British Grand Prix for Formula One. Now, of course, the British Open comes in, and then right after that will be pretty much the start of the Olympics here coming up in the end of July. And we'll talk more about some of the Olympics things to watch. One of the things we talked about yesterday was one of the rowing members of the four-person team is from Penn State, and we'll be hopefully getting a chance to chat with her before she heads to London to talk about her experiences. Major League Baseball last night saw the Home Run Derby, and, of course, it was won by a fielder. no real big surprise there, but let me ask you, what do you think? I thought the booing of Robinson Cano was ridiculous just because he happened to not pick a guy who right now is 16th on the home run list with 16 home runs. I mean, there's a lot of guys ahead of him that probably should have been part of that list, that weren't part of that list, that maybe have more of an argument to be in the home run derby than Billy Butler with just 16 home runs. Now, I say just 16 home runs. I'm not taking anything away from those 16 home runs, but does that warrant, just because he's a Kansas City Royal, that he goes to the home run derby? He's not going to be a starter tonight. At least I don't think he's a starter tonight. Probably get maybe an at-bat for the home team, but if you're selected to be the team captain of a home run derby, do you select somebody from the home stadium just to keep the fans happy? Now, did it have anything to do with Cano not hitting a single home run? That I can't tell you. I mean, he has 20 on the year and did not hit one last night, but he was booed severely when he stepped to the plate. And again, you know, I don't know. I know Kansas City has always been a difficult town to play football in, but I didn't realize that the fans were that passionate about baseball, which I guess is a good thing. But anyway, home run derby last night, and some negativity coming out of that. We'll see if that carries over tonight to the All-Star game itself as well. And you know, we've talked about the All-Star game here on the program many times as well. It's just one of those things that it's, as Steve has said many times at the time, it's moment has passed.
And, moment passed.
Yeah.
But not this show. The moment of this show has not passed.
Not yet, anyway.
No, I'm hoping not. I'm, you know, I'm hoping to make it a football season.
Well, I was just discussing. aren't we all? I was just discussing Cano getting booed last night and how ridiculous I thought that was.
If it had happened in Philadelphia,
I still would think it's ridiculous.
No, but if it had happened in Philadelphia, no, I'm
I know where you're going. I know where you're going, though.
Philadelphia would have been ripped.
Yes,
by everybody.
You're absolutely right.
But because it happened in Kansas City, it was like, ah, yeah, ha, ha, that's funny. But if the same thing happened in Philadelphia, Look at those, the Philly fans, blah, 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 you know, because of the rep.
This is the same fans that threw snowballs at Santa Claus. Yeah, and booed Santa Claus. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they bring that back every year in football season.
But this is, that's why, that's what's so unfair. You know, I've been to Philadelphia so many times in my career for various things. And you know what? I've never once had an issue because guess what? I think they have great fans.
They're not dumb. I'm not saying this because I'm a Phillies fan, but they're not dumb fans. They know their sports.
I mean, right. I mean, do they enjoy their sports? Are they passionate about it? Sure. Do they have definite opinions about it? Sure. What's wrong with that? Nothing. Nothing's wrong with that. Nothing's wrong with having that kind of passion on the table. Nothing wrong with that. So I sit there and there are too many stereotypes. There's not enough honest talk these days. It's too easy to put everything into a category. And after a while, you get sick and tired of hearing about what category everything's been put in.
But this was a stinking home run derby. And the guy has 16 home runs, which is 16th in the American League. And he should be on the home run derby list. Now, I realize that Fielder only has 15 home runs, but who do you think in a head-to-head competition is going to have more home runs?
Kevin, who cares?
Well, obviously Kansas City fans.
No, I mean, who cares? I mean, honestly, I mean, it's a home run derby. I don't care if they put out a guy with 8 home runs.
And there's
who cares?
Yeah, but there's a lot of guys on that list that you could complain about not being there if you really wanted
to. Kevin, who cares?
I understand what you're
saying. It means zilch.
It doesn't.
It means nothing.
Right.
It means nada.
It's a payday to the player, isn't it?
The minimum salary in baseball is $450,000. Who cares?
Listen, I'm not saying they're struggling for that, but... No, I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think it was absolutely ridiculous to sit there and boo Robinson Cano when he came up the bat just because he didn't pick a Kansas City Royal.
Right. Well.
And are they going to do it again tonight when he comes up the bat? During the game?
Which
would be more stupid?
It's irrelevant. There are more serious things going on. Don't you think?
Oh, I totally agree with that. I just think that that's completely one of the most ridiculous things I've heard.
Right.
Booing a guy because he didn't pick the 16th most home run hitter who happens to be on the home team.
First of all, Skip Bayless made a statement today. All right.
Okay.
I was called about this earlier.
All right.
All right. That Andrew McCutchen cannot stay in Pittsburgh if he wants to be a star. Okay.
Okay. What's the reasoning behind that? I think I know, but I want to hear.
The reasoning behind it? The reason behind it deals with the fact that Pittsburgh has a losing image and that he needs to be in a bigger market.
That was my thought as well, because right now he is getting all the attention in Pittsburgh. But again, as you said, it's a team that has not seen success.
So, everything is different now. By the way, Curtis Strange, our guest, bottom of the hour, by the way, following the news, previewing the British Open, among other things. We have once again apologized to the audience for the shabby guest list.
You don't have to pick it up.
Yeah. Everything has changed, and let me tell you, he's already 1970. Baseball comes in with the idea of, look, let's do Monday Night Baseball. And ABC jumps on board and says, okay, that's not a bad idea. Let's go with Monday Night Baseball. So they put the initial team together of Bob Prince, Warner Wolf, and Bob Uecker. They get to mid-July, some late June, early July, something like that. It's before the All-Star break. And the Yankees are going to play the Detroit Tigers at Tiger Stadium. Now, this is 1976. In 1976, the Tigers have a rookie pitcher out of Worcester, Massachusetts, by the name of Mark the Bird Fidrich. Fidrich would talk to the baseball. He'd pat the mound. He'd go wacko when one of the guys made a great play. He was not just a pitcher, but a real personality. And it turned out in 1976, he ended up being a 19-game winner. So they go into the pre-production meeting. The Yankees are going to be playing the Tigers. So in the pre-production meeting, Prince, Wolf, and Uecker tell the producers, we want to feature Mark the Bird Fidrich in the pregame buildup. Rejected. Why? We're going to feature Ken Holtzman. The three announcers look at him completely bemused. Why are we featuring Ken Holtzman? They said, because Ken Holtzman has won games in the World Series with Oakland, and he's the Yankees pitcher, and people in New York know who Ken Holtzman is. They have no idea who Mark Fidrich is. Fidrich that night goes out and pitches an incredible game. May have thrown a complete game. He's the winning pitcher, does all the antics we talked about while pitching effectively, and completely captures the nation's imagination. But the mentality of the network was New York, New York, New York, New York. And the mentality for many years, and let's go back to Ken Griffey's days in Seattle, Ken Griffey Jr., well, if he were New York, he'd be, oh. Everything has changed with the advent of what has happened with the explosion of cable. Between ESPN, Comcast, Root Sports, MLB Network, and then you can go to other sports, NBA TV, NHL TV, NFL Network, to go with their various contracts with TNT, TBS, NBC, CBS, you know, and on and on and on. We can see virtually any game anytime we want. Because of that, there are no such thing anymore as anonymous stars. You can be a star anywhere now. Anywhere. And you'll get the exposure of being a star. Because we can see any game we want. Anytime we want. Any player we want. We don't have to wait for the Saturday game of the week to suddenly watch for the first time. I remember in 1981, a guy by the name of Fernando Valenzuela pitch. It was a big thing on the Saturday game of the week that the Dodgers were playing the Reds at Riverfront Stadium, and for the first time in my life, I was going to get a chance to watch Fernando Valenzuela pitch. It had been all the rage.
I could actually watch this guy who looks up in the sky before he throws right. The ball. Yeah, I remember that.
It was the rage. But that was the first time any of us had a chance to see him. That's why the All-Star game was neat. Wow, incredible. Well, we get to see for the first time, blah, blah. There isn't a guy out there that's going to be playing tonight we haven't seen how many times we want, whether in highlights or actually watching the game on TV. That's why the novelty, it is worn down. And you're not going to have any longer any anonymous stars. Maurice Jones-Drew led the NFL in rushing last year, right?
Yes.
And he played for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We have all watched Maurice Jones-Drew run the football. Because every team is required to be on prime time at least once. And plus, they may play the Steelers, they may play the Eagles.
That's a real rule? That they have to be on primetime at least once.
Yes.
I didn't know that. I heard that before, and I thought it was a joke. I didn't realize it was serious. Okay.
Between Sunday night and Monday night, every team makes one appearance.
Okay. And the special Saturday night games that they have late in the year sometimes, too.
Right. Yeah. That's part of the package.
All right. Okay. Continue on. I'm sorry.
So we all have a chance. He played for Jacksonville. Right? Jacksonville, which is the 31st largest market in the NFL. Green Bay, of course, being 32. But we all know who he is. We know that Blaine Gabbert's their quarterback. We know Paul Posluszny plays down there. They're not the marquee franchise. Where does Kevin Durant play?
In the NBA.
Oklahoma City. Right?
Right.
Kevin Durant doesn't play in New York. Doesn't play in Los Angeles, Chicago. Along with LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, those are the three biggest stars in the game today. Derrick Rose being hurt, so you have to kind of knock him down a peg at the moment. But the three biggest stars on that Olympic stage in London will be LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and Kevin Durant.
And I guarantee you, most people could say where two of the three played.
Kevin Durant plays for Oklahoma City. And he's a star. Who's the biggest star in the National Hockey League? The face of the league.
Sidney Crosby.
Exactly. And where does he play?
In the Bird.
Pittsburgh. Right? The Steelers have a following that is among the top five in this country. Everybody knows who Roethlisberger is. Mendenhall, Wallace, Brown. They can tell you who the first-round draft pick to Castro is.
Some people even know who the backup running back is.
Right? Troy Polamalu. I mean, on and on you go. They're all from Pittsburgh. We are now out of the era where New York is the center of the universe. We're out of that era. New York is not the center of the universe. Great place to be, but you don't have to play there now to get recognition. Eli Manning is the quarterback of the New York Giants, but fans know Drew Brees just as well. Because we all have access now. So this silly, small-minded, but it was on First Take, so I guess they specialize in small-minded. I won't watch the show anymore. It's just too stupid.
That show.
It's too stupid for anybody to sit there and go, you have to be kidding me. Really? I mean, so many of them in the back room said this is cool to watch between Skip Bayless. I mean, Stephen A. is okay sometimes. Jemele Hill was the perspective of Nat. You know, you just sit there and go, what the heck?
Nat.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking, who is this person? What's her background next? Get off TV. You know, that's why they created remotes.
Nat.
You sit there and like, where do the people, they come up with this stuff? He has to go to New York or a bigger market. He has to get out of Pittsburgh. No, he doesn't. Willie Stargell played in Pittsburgh.
He was okay.
People figured out he was really good.
He was okay.
And Roberto Clemente played in Pittsburgh. That's right. If you watch Root Sports, that's all they talk about. Forgot. Yeah, Root Sports. They talk about more about him than they do about Clint Barmas. No offense, but like Barmas can actually still play. All right. Oh well. So the era of you must go to a different market in order to be recognized as a star. That era is gone. LeBron James became a star where? Cleveland. Cleveland. Ken Griffey Jr. became a star in Seattle. Everybody knew who Ken Griffey Jr. was. Became a star in Seattle. You don't have to be in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles anymore. If you're really good, people find you. Karl Malone and John Stockton, people knew who they were. They played for Utah. Wayne Gretzky played in Edmonton, the last outpost. Believe me, people did not discover Gretzky when he was traded in 93 to the Kings. He was already a star in the 80s in Edmonton. I mean, things are different now. We can see all the games, any game we want. We pick and choose now what we want to watch. We are not forced to watch Yankees and Red Sox on Sunday night. We can pick other games now. 7 days a week. Whatever sport we want. We watch Red Zone if we want.
I wish they could come up with a red zone for baseball.
They have it. It's on MLB.
Yeah, they do look-ins. That's true. As a matter of fact,
I think it's called quick pitch.
Yeah, you're right, because I did catch that at last day of the season last year. That was the place to watch the games. I forgot what it was called, though. You're right.
It's called quick pitch. I mean, you can do all these things. We can see. I watched San Diego play Cincinnati the other night. Joey Votto's a star. He plays for Cincinnati. He doesn't play for Chicago, Los Angeles, New York. This small-minded mentality that dates back to the 50s and 60s got to go by the boards. Television has opened up the entire world. Aaron Rodgers plays for Green Bay. It's a town of 102,000 in Wisconsin.
Yeah, but Green Bay is an anomaly because everybody, you don't have to be a fan of the, or live in Wisconsin to be a fan of the Packers now.
Yeah, but it's a town of 102,000. It's not New York.
But I understand your point. You're right.
It's not New York. Kevin Durant plays in Oklahoma City, not New York. And Oklahoma City is only two championships behind the Knicks.
It's true.
Can you believe that? The Knicks have two titles. Two?
I can't figure that out.
They talk over and over again. Amari. All right. Carmelo. We've got to talk about Melo. They don't win. Next, go to the team that wins. I want to talk about them. You wonder why the four-letter network loses traction. All right. Bottom of the hour news, then Curtis Strange on how to fix Kevin Slice as we continue.
Great. Sorry, I got excited because I've been looking for that support all for the years.
You want to know what he told me to do about your slice?
What?
He explained to me. He said, how bad is it? I explained exactly how bad it was. He said, turn to the left further when you hit.
Yeah, but the problem is I'm already pointing into the next state.
Now, I understand it's fearful, okay, for other players.
It is.
What's he pointing over here for? Why is he in the pointing over there?
Sad part is you think Steve's exaggerating, but he's not. The first time I lined up, he goes, where are you hitting the ball? I said, do you see that tree in the other fairway? Yeah, that's where I'm aiming. Why? I said, just wait. And the ball starts to come out. Oh.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know the bend on 11 and 15?
Yes.
Yeah, that's about the same. It's about the same. It's unbelievable. All right. News bottom of the hour. Then Curtis Strange, who says Kevin Swing is strange. We'll talk to him. He's at the Senior Open. He'll then be going to the British Open. Looking forward to talking with him. But I describe your game to him. Wow. His assessment wasn't pretty.
Neither was yours when you saw my game as well.
No, we both had the same thing. You should be playing on a course that has windmills.
Actually, I've been known to hit it in the other fairway on those, too.
Well, isn't that sad and pathetic?
Yep.
Our news isn't.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Lenape Solar Hotline is hot and active today at 1-800-795-9565. And on the Lenape Solar Hotline, we now go out to the U.S. Senior Open, where we bring in from ABC and ESPN, Curtis Strange, who next week will be announcing the British Open. Curtis, welcome. It's great to have you on the show with us today.
Thank you. Nice. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, it turns out in your career, if there's in the British Open, which sometimes is very kind, your highest finish actually is at Royal Lytham at St. Anne's with the year 71 back in 88.
What is it that makes a links layout a little more challenging, especially for an American player?
Boy, that's plenty of reasons there. It's number one is the elements, the weather, are normally not the same as they are in the States. And it looks like this year they're going to be somewhat challenging because of the weather we saw at Wimbledon. It sounds like it's going to be settled in through September, I heard. But anyway, you know, it's hard, fast, play on the ground golf. It's not through the air. It's on the ground, and especially when you get the wind blowing, you have to put it on the ground. It's, erratic bounces. It's greens that aren't have a lot of roll to them. It's just completely different. But the bottom line is it's played more on the ground and not in the air like we do in the States.
Phil Mickelson, for example, when Barclays was a sponsor of the Scottish Open, he would play there, part of his sponsorship. Barclays is no longer sponsoring the Scottish Open, but he made a last-second decision after Greenbrier to go over. Wise move to get used to the conditions, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's always advantageous for anybody to go over early and for nothing else to get acclimated to the weather. Personally, I always had to play the week before because the tournament the week before was in my hometown, and I always felt like I was behind the eight ball simply because I got over there and basically froze for the first two or three days, couldn't prepare properly because I'd come from 100-degree heat. So if you can go over 3, 4, 5 days early, the best-case scenario would be over and playing the Scottish Open the week before. You can acclimate yourself not only with the weather, but also the golf course and the playing conditions as well.
And what is it, King's Mills you play in the week before?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Down in Williamsburg, yeah.
So
what about the travel part of it? Just the physical nature of just having to go over there, because you would have to go over after playing in a tournament and then try to go over there and not just acclimate, but also the physical part of traveling.
Well, that's part of it, too. And you get used to the weather, but also get used to the jet lag, and that's something that everybody has to do, and that's a given. But it takes you a good couple of days, and it's tough enough just to go over there and do the television. It's something else to try to go over there and be precise and have your balance and the wherewithal the first couple of days of playing golf. And some acclimate better than others, but it does take a couple of days.
Tiger Woods, of course, coming off the first 36 holes of the U.S. Open, played well. Then the last 23 holes or so, the wheels came off the wagon a bit, which, as you know, can happen at a U.S. Open. That's because it's the toughest test. Then, of course, he wins, and then he misses the cut last week in West Virginia. What are your thoughts heading in about where he is?
Well, with the way he's been up and down the last couple of 3 months, it looks like he's going to play pretty well in the Open Championship.
Because this will be the upswing, right?
I think, bottom line, he just hasn't played near as consistently as we remember him playing. But with that said, he's still, the only player to win three events this year. He's when he's played well, he's been, spectacular. But when he hasn't, he hasn't. And is that because of his game? Is that because of age? Is that because of his work? Is that because of, being a single parent and trying to, work out things in the home? Who knows what it is? But all I can say is when he's played well, he's played very well and beat everybody.
Ben Hogan, when he played in a major, and especially the U.S. Open, would always drive to the course, it is said, 5 miles per hour under the speed limit because he wanted to mentally get himself into the idea of patience. As someone who has been highly successful and won at this level, at the highest level, especially our national championship, what is the value of patience?
Well, I don't think it can be overstated. You heard us talk a lot about it in the U.S. Open 3 weeks ago. We talked a lot about it last week and, the Women's Open. It's just a very, very tough test of golf, and it's not just a test physically. It's a test mentally as well. And why is that? Well, you just have to change your whole philosophy and how you play the game. You're not going to hit every fairway and every green, so you have to accept some tough situations, but you have to stay in the game and work hard and be patient with it. Be patient with yourself and be patient with the golf course. Not get overly aggressive. Pars are always a good score. All of those cliches are so true in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. It just can't, as like I said a moment ago, it just can't be overstated.
We mentioned the links part of it. just the pure layout of the course. You mentioned you have to play ground ball golf in some ways, but what about the actual layout on a links course compared to the lush manor sometimes that we get to play on here?
Well, that's just the difference. You know, we play green, lush golf courses that are so watered every night, especially in the heat of the summer like we've seen the last 2 or 3 weeks. Everything's so soft. It has to stay that way. But over there, it doesn't. You know, it's not 100 degrees over there in England right now. It's 60s. They're getting plenty of rain. It could be actually greener than what we're used to seeing because of the rain. But it's still going to be firm, fast. Conditions won't be as plush and as lush as we see over here. But, you know, you accept that. And I think, you know, patience is a big part of the game in the Open Championship as well, with different elements involved, with wind and weather, which can be very frustrating, but also with bad bounces and bad lies. That's all part of the game over there at the Open Championship.
Every course, of course, has its own personality. Royal Lytham at St. Anne's has been a part of the rotation dating back to 1926 when Bobby Jones first won there. What is the personality of Royal Lytham and St. Anne's? Because each course does have its own personality.
You know, other than Birkdale in England, which is a fairly flat golf course by their standards, I have to tend to disagree. I think they might have their own little different personality, but they all basically are the same. When you talk about the elements and you talk about the Open Championship, they try to get them all basically the same condition, and it is a game played on the ground over there, as we've said 2 or 3 times. So with that, I just think it's all pretty much the same game. Now, they have some funky holes like all links courses, and they have some really good holes. They have some hard ones. They have some easier ones. But so much depends. When you tee it up every day over there, it's so different than the day before because the wind has changed. The temperature might have changed a great deal. And, you know, we're not used to it, but you have to accept that fact. Go ahead and just play the game. And, you know, par is a good score. You know, if the weather's good, it's not. But a lot of times it is.
You played in the Ryder Cup 5 times, and you captained the 2002 team. Can you give the fans an idea of what the Ryder Cup means to a professional player? Because we watch the major championships, but the players talk so much about the Ryder Cup. Explain to them why.
Well, it's a chance for, you know, a very individual, selfish athlete who plays in a complimentary way, but, you know, playing a very individual sport, all of a sudden you have a team event in the Ryder Cup, and it's fun. It's different. I think some of the most fun I ever had in my life, and I think most everybody agrees, you know, when you played team sports back in high school or college. College golf was a ball because we had teammates.
Winning at the country club the first time or being the Ryder Cup captain?
Oh, you know, winning U.S. Open by far.
Okay.
You know, the Ryder Cup captaincy was a joy for me and an honor. And I think once you got to the week of the play-in, everything was set into place. And, you know, I was captain of 12 world-class golfers, and so all I had to do was steer them in the right direction and told them make me look good. All the work had been done. And, yeah, you talk to individuals, and that was part of the fun for me is trying to talk to the individuals, you know, individually, because everybody's personality is different. I kid all the time. I said, yeah, I had 12 players, but I think I had 14 or 15 different personalities, you know. And I had to deal with every one of them on a particular day. But I think I had a ball, and that's just an honor to be a part of that. But the Open is a lot of pressure to try to win something like that.
Absolutely. The transition to the broadcast booth, what was easiest for you, and actually what was more difficult than maybe you thought it would be?
Oh, I think it probably is all much more difficult than I think the average person thinks. Even when you know the game, you know, I'm trying to get it from my mind out my mouth in a simple way to where I can bring the viewer closer to the game, hopefully do that, explain what's going on in the golf course. And I do it well sometimes, and sometimes I don't. I just think that trying to, you know, minimize your words and try to make it as simple and as clear as possible is my goal. And to try to tell the people what's really happening out on that golf course. Because like any great athlete, they make it look easy, but it's not. You know, I'm up here at the Senior Open this week, and I'm looking at the golf course as we speak, and this golf course might be as hard as any U.S. Open rough I've ever seen. But anyway, they'll make it look easy this week, but it's really not. And the truth with Tiger and Phil and Westwood and McElroy and the likes. So if I can try to bring the viewer a little bit closer to the game, that's good.
When you get to a course now and you're going to be announcing the event, do you walk the course ahead of time? Do you try and hit a couple balls in? Do you just roll some balls on greens? How do you go about that part to give us, the viewer, a better feel for what you're seeing?
Well, I walk, you know, the golf course at least twice at a big event. I watch players play each hole. That way I know how the players are going to play a particular hole. And, you know, a lot of it I've seen play the golf courses before. And so that helps. But, yeah, I do my homework. You know, I don't hit any balls like that, but I watch plenty of players hit shots, and like I'm doing right now. And, you know, that's just all part of getting to know the golf course. The players themselves, you know, for instance, here at the Senior Open, I know these guys. And last week at the Women's Open, you have to do some homework.
Right. These are your peers that you're watching this week. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, these are the guys I grew up with. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I have to, no doubt about that. What will the schedule like be for you after the British Open's over with?
The only thing we have left on ESPN is the Ryder Cup. We do the Friday of the Ryder Cup, and that is it. And I look forward to that as well. But our big event and one we look forward to all year long is the British Open. That's our flagship golf event. We have all 4 days. We have many, many hours of golf, which is fantastic for the viewer back at home. And I think the viewer likes to see the Open Championship because it's so different than what they're going to go out and play that afternoon after the television.
That's exactly right, because it's on the morning here. So yeah, we're out in the afternoon playing golf after watching that in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people really enjoy doing that. I know I did. The couple of times I wasn't able to play or didn't go, I enjoyed waking up and watching the Open Championship.
Well, we enjoy the great job you do, along with Mike Tirico, an old friend of mine. So I wish you nothing but the best. I want to thank you for the time you gave us and the perspective you gave us. I think it's always valuable for everybody to get perspective from somebody who's been among the best.
Well, thank you, man. Enjoyed it. Let's do it again.
Curtis Strange with us, joining us from the Senior Open Championship, by the way, which Kevin is creeping toward being eligible for. All right.
You already have your tour card for that. What are you talking about?
Well, I've never once tried to explain to anybody that I was young.
Oh, okay.
I've never tried that. You're the one that keeps trying to, you know, that you're the young guy.
I'm younger.
Right.
You forgot the girl.
And the whole thing. Okay. Now, if we want to talk about youth, right, pure, unadulterated youth, we talk Sarah Bartlett.
That's true.
All right. You know, on the air sounds well beyond her years. Intelligent, again, well beyond her years. But again, you know, half my age, I know that. But then again, almost everybody else in the audience is too.
I'm not taking the opportunity. My parents told me to respect your elders.
I was just a little concerned that when the station welcomed me on board months and months ago, they gave me a cane. All right. A little harsh.
It was Christmas time. You know, it was
yeah,
a candy cane, you know.
Yeah. Sean Carey screaming out, "Come on, old man." Thanks. All right. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. And again, we apologize for the shabby guest list. Now, tomorrow, we're looking at getting Natalie Dell on the show. Natalie Dell from Everett here in Pennsylvania made the U.S. Olympic rowing team. We talked about her story yesterday. It looks like tomorrow's the target day to have her. Next week, Murray Chass, one of the truly great baseball writers, on the show. Lift for Life, football players on the show from 4 to 5 on Friday. We'll continue with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK with the Steve Jones Show after this.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time, satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
Life is always wonderful when you get the perfect night's sleep. And Shimox, along with Serta, can help. It's the Serta Dare to Compare Mattress event going on now at Shimox Furniture and Cobon. For the first time ever, you can try a Serta Perfect Sleeper mattress for 90 days in your own home. Serta Perfect Sleepers are on sale now for as low as $599.95. Shimox also has the incredible iComfort Sleep System by Serta. And you can take the 120-day comfort challenge. Try it in your home for 120 days. And prices start as low as $12.99. They dare you to compare these great mattresses and even greater prices. Shimox offers free delivery, in-home setup, removal of your old bedding, plus special 12-month financing, and even free Serta sheet. It's the Dare to Compare mattress event going on for a limited time at Shimox Furniture, Route 61, Colbon. Since 1915, they sell happiness. See store for financing and in-home trial details.
Greetings, Mark Lawrence from WKOK's On the Mark program. Tomorrow on the Mark, 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m., it's an Open Phones Wednesday on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Does he ask me to call?
Everybody, rock out.
All right. You don't have to if you don't
it's
want to.
It's all done now. Everybody else, you know, obviously, that's what you were doing there.
Well, of course I was. Who wouldn't? It was enjoyable. Yeah.
True.
We were talking about Lynx Golf. Mm-hmm. And you were saying you played a Lynx course down in at Myrtle Beach and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, John Daly has a Lynx course called Wicked Stick. There's the red tees, the white tees, the blue tees, and they call them the John Daly tees. Those are the ones that are another 50 yards behind the blue tees.
Sure, there's championship tees.
I don't even know. Listen, they're well beyond championship level tees. I mean, they're a long, long ways. Needless to say, I did not play those, but... It's not true Lynx golf because it's the closest thing you can get to a Lynx style course in this country, at least in that area. But because of its location near the Atlantic, which is probably about a mile at the most away, you do get a lot of the wind off of the ocean, and it's, you know, there's no trees or anything, so you get a real feel that way. But a lot of roll, and with the course being so wide open, you get a windy day, boy. I can understand the challenges with Lynx golf and in the British Open because of that.
Well, I played one Lynx course, and that is Highland Golf Club on Cape Cod, Truro, Massachusetts. The sixth tee box has the ocean down below, crashing waves as you hit, and the seventh hole goes straight into the lighthouse.
Are you sure you weren't playing the miniature golf one that was next door?
It's amazing. Look it up. Highland Golf Links.
I got to see a photo of this place.
They actually had to, the one thing they had to do, though, at one point was they had to, they didn't really have to make an adjustment to the golf course, but because of beach erosion, the lighthouse, which is the Highland Light, they had to move it back a little bit because of beach erosion. And that was actually an issue that they had to deal with a few years ago. But the house is right behind the seventh green. Of course, Kevin doesn't believe me.
I didn't say I didn't believe you. I said I'd love to see this.
Well, then look it up online.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
Well, come on. Killing the show here. Let's, you know.
Well, I see. The reason is I'd like to be able to post this at stevejonesshow.com.
Well, I loved my brother and I loved playing that golf course. Loved it.
Okay, so I see the lighthouse now.
Right.
Now I'm seeing a hole. Okay. Well, yeah, all right, I see that.
It's right behind the seventh green.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's where this camera shot is, because you get a 360 panoramic view from the tee just below it, the way it looks.
Right. So, right. Then you play eight, and you go away from it.
Yeah, yeah. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna post that link online at stevejonesshow.com so you can check that out.
Well, it is only a 9-hole course.
Do you play it from two different tees then?
No, if you want to play 18, you just go back and play it again.
Just play twice. Well, some courses that are 9-hole courses, they'll set up a different tee box, so you play it from a different angle.
Right. You start out at one there, okay? It's right off of Route 6. You start out at one, then two takes you toward the ocean, but then when you play the third hole, which is a par three, the green is at the ocean, okay? But it's a cliff. And then then you go back, you play four, you go back inside, five, which is kind of tucked behind. All right, and then when you play six, you tee off at six again with the ocean crashing in the background, and you go in, and then seven goes toward the lighthouse. Then you have to cross a road, and when you cross the road, then you play eight, and then you play nine. Now, I know they've moved the lighthouse. I think the lighthouse now, which had been behind seven, I think now is sitting more behind nine than seven. And it's the actual Cape Cod Light. And this golf course goes back to 1892. And I love play. I've even played it when it's been in fog.
How in the world would you play that when it's in fog?
You know what? We didn't lose a ball.
Here we go with the I didn't lose a ball story again.
No, the two of us, we found it to be remarkable. We laughed. We couldn't believe it. We would be losing left and right. Seriously, we thought we'd be losing golf balls left and right.
Well, thank goodness Tony the Tiger didn't get lost on that hole.
Oh, my Tony the Tiger ball. You like that, huh? I played golf one time with the guys from Kellogg's. All right? It was a charity golf tournament. They put me in the same group of the guys from Kellogg's, and they gave me, nutritional drinks. They gave me Kellogg's bars. There's some new product they were putting out. And then they gave me all these Tony the Tiger golf balls. And you want to know when you hit it straight? Hit it straight when you hit Tony right on the chops.
As I've said many times, though, it started to get annoying when you hit a good shot and you went, "It's great!"
Yeah. You love the Tony the Tiger ball.
I do.
I
loved it even more when he went into the drink.
Oh, listen to you. I finally hit one in the water on 17, lost the ball, and you went, it's like, great teammate.